Tonight we want to complete the psalm. Remember, the context is David has gotten himself under God's discipline, and Psalm 6 is reminiscent of that extended period of time when he lived in disobedience. The reason, it appears to me, that the psalm probably was not written while he was in disobedience, but as he looks back on it, is simply because of something like verse 9, "The Lord has heard my supplication, the Lord will receive my prayer," and so forth. Which I take it is looking back now, and he's reminiscing on the agony he had when he was under God's discipline. We'll be looking tonight at the part of the psalm that is made up of David's lament. Remember, the lament part is the part of the psalm where he tells about his stress. The part where he tells about his distress. And then he will end up with God delivering him, and he'll end up with the praise section. But first of all, the lament in verses 6 and 7, and then he will conclude with praise, which will be verses 8 through 10. But before we do that, I'd like to make four or five observations about David from the standpoint of this psalm. First of all, Psalm 6 is designed to tell the psychological effects of disobedience. I'm going to tell the psychological effects or results of disobedience. He is going to talk about the grief, the fear, the agony that's involved when he was disobedient to God, and therefore some of the psychological impact of what did this do to David mentally, what did it do to him emotionally, and so forth. Second, that though David is a man who many times is under God's discipline, I think we can fairly say this, that basically David does not coddle his problems. And by that, inevitably, in David's writings, especially the ones where he's confessing, like Psalm 32, Psalm 38, Psalm 51, David simply lays out the facts, and then he says, it's all due to sin. And basically, it's the facts laid out, and then he'll go to the root cause and say, very bluntly, it's due to sin. And that's what I mean by he doesn't coddle it. He doesn't say, well, this is an excuse or that is an excuse. David will simply look at his own experience and say, I am in the situation that I am mentally and emotionally and sometimes physically, and it is due to sin. A third lesson, I think, that comes out of this a psalm like Psalm 6 is that David very beautifully illustrates how long and how much, how deeply we will allow ourselves to suffer before we face reality. One of the strange characteristics of the human race, that we will allow ourselves to suffer and suffer and hurt and hurt and hurt before we come to face reality. And you ask, why... As David recognizes the discipline in verse 1, don't rebuke me in your anger. Don't chasten me in your hot displeasure. Why would you stay in a place where you get rebuked? Why would you remain in a condition where all this would happen? Look at Psalm 32. Really, what we're saying in this third observation is that all of us are spiritually masochistic. We will allow ourselves to go through all kinds of hell before we will face reality. Very, very strange type thing. Verse 3, when I kept silence, my bones waxed old through my roaring all day long. And you want to back off and say, well, David, for heaven's sakes then, if you were suffering all this bad, why did you keep silence? You know that's the cause of it. Why did you do that? Day and night, verse 4, your hand was heavy upon me. Why do you want to suffer that way? One of the characteristics that David illustrates is how long and how much we are willing to allow ourselves to suffer before we really face reality. Psalm 38. Another psalm where David flatly realizes that all of this that he's going through, it's due to his sin. Well, why don't you quit it? Why do you go through all of this suffering? This is a very strong psalm along that line. O Lord, don't rebuke me in your wrath. Don't chasten me in your hot displeasure, for your arrows stick fast in me. Why would anyone want to stand still and be shot at with arrows? Your hand presses me sore. He knows it's God. There's no soundness in my flesh because of your anger. He knows it. Why don't you correct it? Why does he go through all of this until you finally get down to some reality in verse 18? And what's the reality? The reality is, I will declare my iniquity. I'll be sorry for my sin. So he illustrates, and we have to say he illustrates it because we can't say that's just peculiar to David. How many of us have been very willing to undergo lots of mental, psychological stress, knowing very well it's God's discipline? It's very much the case that we're in disobedience and we live under this before we finally come around to a reality. As a matter of fact, in Psalm 6, David held out for so long that he thought he was going to die. And he's going to pray and say, Lord, I'm on the edge of the grave and I can't praise you there. Why would he go all of this time right to the edge of the grave before he would say, I would give? If we weren't in a little debate here, I would use this illustration. I'll use it anyway to prove that I like dogs. I had a Doberman. And Hans illustrated, the cats ate him. He illustrated this very much, is before he would face the reality of obedience, you had to kill him. Every day he had to be killed with a board, or put him down with your foot on his neck and pull till both eyeballs popped. And then, fine dog, obedient the rest of the day. And I always thought that is basically the way God often has to deal with us. Put us down on the ground, and until we come to obedience, pull the choke chain until our eyes pop out, and then we say, I give, I face reality, it's sin that's causing all the pressure, and I confess it. And here David is in Psalm 6, just tottering on the edge of the grave that God has brought him to, and now he's ready to get things straightened out. But this is a quirk of human nature, of the sin nature that is very much there, and it's good to be aware of it, because we ought to come around to reality first before we have to go through all the suffering. Right, fourth is, notice coming to verse 8, the confidence. Depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity. Verse 10, for the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping, the Lord has heard my supplication, and so forth. Notice the principle then, confidence follows restoration. David was not out there when he was under discipline telling his opponents to disappear. He didn't have confidence because there was no vertical alignment. Or, that's what we're basically saying, is that vertical alignment must go before horizontal confidence. And he is definitely confident in these verses, but the point is, he's got things straightened out vertically. And a fifth observation, down in verse 10, or 8 rather, depart from me, all you workers of iniquities, for the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping, the Lord has heard my supplication, the Lord will receive my prayer. And the idea is, the Lord is personal. And responded to tears. Even if those tears were self-imposed, and even if those tears were due to discipline. So those important things. Now, let's take the last part of the psalm and put down, before we look at the details of it, what's the poetic structure? Remember, Psalms is poetry, and it has poetic structure. First of all, the structure of 6 and 7. The structure poetically is he gives an introductory line. The introductory line of the poetry is, I am weary with my groaning. then it is followed by two couplets. And they're synonymous. Synonymous mean they say the same thing in different words. And the two couplets are, all the night I make my bed to swim, I water my couch with tears. Or the couplets are, my bed is made to swim, and my couch, I water it. So those two little couplets go underneath. And so the introductory line is that life is nothing but a sigh. Then two couplets to express the pain and the agony that he's going through. That's the poetic structure of those two verses. Verses 8 through 10 are put together in this way. You have the first line of verse 8 is parallel with verse 10. And in between, you got triplets. See, up here, I make my bed to swim, I water my couch. There are two lines just parallel to one another. You don't have to do that. You can split them apart and put things in between. Verse 8, depart from me, all you workers of iniquity. Now, triplet. For the Lord has heard my voice and my weeping. The Lord has heard my supplication. That's number 2. The Lord will receive my prayer. That's number 3. And notice how verse 10 goes back and parallels verse 8. Verse 10 says, let all my enemies be ashamed. So that's the poetic structure that we're looking at. A general big statement, then two little couplets underneath it to amplify what he means by that, and then leave, all you workers of iniquity. Then you jump to verse 10 for the line that parallels that, and then in between, you have the triplets that are set together. And it's important always in studying Psalms to recognize this is poetry. And poetry's got its own unique structure for a particular purpose. And to me, this is a very neat little arrangement right here. He sighs all the time. Now, can you say that in a different way? I make my bed swim. Can you say it a different way? I water my couch. And then he comes on with the break over into the victorious side of things. Depart, workers of iniquity. Why? Why should we depart? Because God has heard, God has heard, God has heard 3 times, and now let me remind you what I just said to you, depart. All right, that is the poetic structure of it. Now let's go into some of the details. First of all, the lament. This is where David unloads his problem. And we start with the introductory line. And that is the part of verse 8 that says, I am weary with my groaning. All right, first of all, what about the verb weary? Weary translates a Hebrew verb, yaga. And it refers to a state or a condition, and it's a state of toil. It's used usually in the context of stress that may be, that is usually a mental and emotional stress. I think New American has used weary? Okay, we've got weary. So the important point is he selected a verb that's used quite commonly in the context of somebody that is under real emotional stress or somebody that's having some really serious mental stress or problems. So that's the type of word that he's using in the psychological price tag. So I am mentally and emotionally in toil. Or we could put it, I am fatigued mentally. I've had it mentally. I'm at the end of my rope. And then all of this is he is weary with his groaning. And our New American Standard has done real well with the Hebrew word and translated it sigh. The term itself throughout the Old Testament can be traced to someone sighing for a physical cause. Someone comes up and takes a hat pin and sinks it under your shoulder blade. You would emit a response, and this word would be perfectly appropriate for that type of thing. It can also be used when you've gotten a psychological pin in your emotions, so it can be coming out of a mental or emotional cause also. Psychological price tag is what's involved. Now, this describes the type of thing that all of us have had in some degree. The stress of an emotional situation, the mental stress, and the sigh that comes out of it is common to us. And we ought to put in here a little note, is that he's defining psychological mental stress is to keep in mind that men and women suffer mental and emotional disorders for one of two reasons only. I'm just going to start putting M-E for mental, emotional. Mental, emotional disorders for one of two reasons. One, it is possible for a person to have a mental or emotional disorder because of organic or chemical damage. We should be well acquainted with the fact that it is possible for the brain or the body or the nervous system to be damaged organically so that you have some of the characteristics we have up here. And we need to note that because we want to say that just because a person is under mental emotional stress and they're going down under it, or like David at the edge of the grave with it, that this necessarily indicates disobedience or necessarily indicates sin, because there can be organic chemical damage. The only other option is we suffer these things because of sin, either ours or someone else's. For example, a child is abandoned by their parents, which is sin. And the child could very well, at the hands of that sin, suffer some real mental, emotional problems due to that. Or it could be our own sin. In this particular case, we're talking about David's own personal sin. Sue? All right, what about... No. No, I would take it that Job suffered to some degree at the hands of sin, the invaders, Bernie's property, and so forth. This, of course, is not to say that this thing can't be come about under the control and the direction of God, such as Satan wanted to sift Peter, and the Lord said, okay. And remember, with Job, all of his suffering came with God's approval. So that, we should also add that this type of thing we're describing up in the party part, the stress of emotional and mental and emotional stress and problems, doesn't abdicate what we've got, for example, in the book of 2 Corinthians, where Paul is in despair and suffering tremendously at the hands of his persecutors and so forth. But that was due to sin. So we shouldn't take the indication that just because these emotions are here is necessarily an indication of a spiritual problem at all. But basically, one of these two things, when we're under this depression, and I think David has lots of depression here, depression and that sort of thing, it's one thing to suffer. It's a different thing to be under a state of actual depression. I take it David, he wasn't functioning. He's about to die. He just couldn't handle it anymore. In fact, he really thought he was going to die under the pressure. But usually one of those two things. When we're, and I think what we say here, we're describing psychiatric suffering up in this first part of it. All right, now this Oh, I ought to add one other thing to this, and that is, going back to the word weary for just a minute. What is it that makes you weary? One of two things, or a combination of both. And think simply being physically weary now. Number one, intensity of activity. Or duration of activity. If you sprint with everything you've got and you're weary at the end, what was it? It was the intensity of it. And if someone said, well, you only ran 10 minutes, but you don't know how fast and intensely it was done. Or you might run very slowly for 2 hours and the very duration of it. And I take it that David is saying it's not only the intensity of the pressure, but it's this duration of the thing that is so difficult. Now, notice the two parallel lines that come down in verse 6 and begin to explain it. This is not just a little, you know, a little emotional thing. This is very deep. All the night, better not to say all night, but better translation would be every night. He's talking about the duration of this. Every night, I make my bed to swim. So the idea of the intensity is involved. And now when we look at that first phrase, I make my bed to swim, that could be taken one of two ways. It could be taken exactly parallel with the next one, and he made his bed to swim with what? Tears. I make my bed to swim. The next line, I water my couch with tears. So that in both lines, he's talking about that he every night soaks his bed with tears. That first one could be another reference. He could make his bed to swim with sweat of stress. Perhaps David is describing the nightmares in which he breaks out in a sweat and he waters his bed with that. Then, coming on with the next line, I water my couch with tears. Either one of them. Actually, I water my couch. The word masa is to dissolve or liquefy something. And if you look at the fact that they didn't sleep on the same kind of mattresses that we sleep on, they did not have inner springs, and David, and I know the pun, did not have a waterbed. Why did that have to cross my mind? Serious there. But had your basic oriental bed, which was just a rack with reeds stretched on it. And David is simply saying, I'm going to dissolve this reed bed. It's going to begin to fall apart because of the tears that fall on it. This is intense, intense suffering that is going on the part of Paul, a part of David. All right, with the seventh verse, you got two more parallel lines. And the first one is, my eye is consumed because of grief. Now that phrase needs some work to understand exactly what David is saying here. First of all, he makes a reference to my eye is consumed with grief. And let's do some work with that because we need to see something about the word for eye. The word for eye, ayin, when we translate that word ayin as the word I, we have limited the word, I think, too much. To translate as our translators, both New American Standard and King James done, have simply given us I here, that limits the word too much. Let me show you two passages why I say that. The first one is in 2 Kings 9:30. If we're trying to get the image just out of the eye, I think we're going to miss something that's very much in the context. 2 Kings 9:30. It says, and when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezreel heard of it, and she painted her face. And that is exactly the same word as is translated I over in Psalm 6. And it's obvious here that what did she paint? Well, she didn't paint her eyeballs. She painted her face as our translators have given it. So notice, if we take and translate, when we take the word as I, we're limiting the big picture. So it can apply to your whole face, of which the eye is part. Now, if David is talking in that sense, then the image would be is that my whole face is aging. And that would be quite an image, wouldn't it? Because that would include the eyes, that would include the wrinkles perhaps, that would include, it would include the complexion. As a matter of fact, look at another passage, Numbers 11:7. And here we've got the word that is eye or face, and we'll find out that the word also can apply to color or complexion. In 11 and verse 7, it's talking about the manna. It says the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof is the color of delium. And the word color is the same word that is the word eye. So, taking that back then to Psalm 6 and verse 7, the question then is, should this word be used in its limited sense of the eye, or should it be expanded to the face? I take it that probably the face is the idea, is that David's whole facial countenance and perhaps even color, this would include the eye, shows disobedience. David is under discipline, and if you would look at his face, he gives a picture of that very thing. So that the idea then in verse 7 would be, my eye or my face, my whole complexion is consumed, and it's consumed because of the grief. So the idea that is involved is he's talking about the discipline of premature aging. David looks aged prematurely. Pressure that God put David only. Now, if we take also and recognize that the word I is in here, is David just talking about his physical appearance? Is he just saying, I'm under discipline and I look it physically? The I is also used figuratively for perception. And is David also saying that under God's discipline, I have lost my perspective and I have lost my perception? And we might ask, when we are disobedient, what kind of perception do we have? And we'll find out in closing out the psalm that David's perception was very, very clearly distorted, and it was all off. So notice that the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual aspects of life are all what? Interwoven together. As a matter of fact, when John looks at his mental, and he looks at his physical, and he looks at his emotional. And by the way, this is a statement you can make categorically about David in the Psalms. When David talks about emotional, physical, and mental suffering, he always, always, always ties it to his spiritual condition. Always. Can you find any exception to that? That David inevitably will make that link. And the lesson, obviously, to us ought to be that in the inspired book of Psalms, when we're talking about all kinds of emotions, all kinds of mental stress that shows up in his physical condition, David is always going to take us back and say, there's a spiritual aspect to this thing. It's my relationship to God that is bringing about these particular pressures. Now, that doesn't mean to go to the extreme, such as the disciples did. Coming on the poor blind man. Who sinned? Him or his parents that he was born blind? And the Lord says, this is not a matter of sin at all. So we don't want to go out, and if some dog lover falls down the back step and breaks a leg, we don't want to say, well, that's spiritual discipline, though it probably is. Okay. Okay, now what's the cause of this premature aging on David's part? It says, my eye is consumed because of grief. So the cause of it is grief. Now, just reading through any of our translations, it would be easy to think, well, it's the inner suffering that is causing all of this type of thing. The word for grief means to be vexed. And it's used in one of two ways. Vexed, as in grief. Or vexed, as in anger. The word grief right here is a word in the Old Testament that can mean anger. Now let's take that further. This word for grief right here is a word that describes a response that God can have toward His children. For example, Psalm 85, 5. David says he's consumed because of grief. And I want you to see the same word, grief. And David is questioning God, and he says, that's the way you act toward me. You're vexed toward me. It says, will you be angry? And he's speaking of God, with us forever. So notice, it's a quality of feeling that God can have toward His people. So that, if we go back to Psalm, we've got one of two choices. Is the word there in Psalm 6 and verse 7 could be, mine eye or face is consumed because of anger, God's anger. Or if we take it to be grief, then it would be David's grief. Now what is consuming David? His grief or God's discipline? I would opt for the latter. That the meaning of verse 7 is my eye is consumed because of God's anger toward me. My reasoning behind that would be in verse 7, the two parallel lines, what is the enemy of David, external or internal? What is it in line 2? It waxes all because of what? External or internal? My enemies, external. I would think it would be better to keep the first line parallel with that. Mine eye is consumed because of God's anger, external pressure. It waxes old because of mine enemies, external pressure. The other reason for taking that of grief to refer to something inflicted by God is because of verse 1. What are we talking about in Psalm 6? Don't rebuke me in your anger. Don't chase him in your hot displeasure. So I take it David then is saying in this, my whole being my whole being is consumed because of God's anger. He's simply saying, Lord, the discipline is killing me. Or we could, if we want to really include both, we could say the objective reason of his suffering is God's anger, and that has a subjective result. And the subjective result is David's grief. That would include both ideas, and it's not unusual for, in the Old Testament especially, for two ideas to be involved. So that with the word grief, a reference objectively to the anger of God, subjectively to what it's doing to David on the inside. It's causing, God is vexed with David, and therefore he vexes David, and therefore the chain reaction goes on, his whole being is consumed because of the anger of God. Now, in the next line, last part of verse 7, it waxes old because of mine enemies, and the growing old actually is a word that means it advances in age. David is aging. It ages because of all mine enemies. Now, very important thing to note at this point. David's enemies at this point are aging him. David's enemies are aging David. And in the next verse, verse 8, David is going to say to his enemies, "Depart and leave me alone." Now, I want to make a little comparison here between Psalm 3 and Psalm 6. In Psalm 6, were there enemies of David? Well, when you come down to verse 10 of Psalm 6, it says, "Let all my enemies be ashamed and sore vexed." And then in the verse we just read, he is growing old because of his enemies. So, in chapter 6, you have enemies present. And what is happening to David? With the enemies present, David is falling apart. Now, how is this different than Psalm 3? In Psalm 3, the first verse says, "Lord, how they increase that trouble me." And the word "trouble me" is the same term as the word "enemies" over in chapter 6. So, what is common to chapter 3 that's common to chapter 6? In both chapters, enemies are present. So that you got a common denominator. Enemies are there in chapter 3. Enemies are there in chapter 6. What's the difference? The difference is not in the presence of the enemies. In one, David is falling apart. Would you describe him in Psalm 3 as falling apart? Remember the psalm? He states the enemies, and is this falling apart? Verse 3, "Thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, the lifter up of my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept." Is that falling apart? "I awakened. The Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves round against me." What is the difference? In Psalm 6, David falls apart, and in Psalm 3, David stands. Why? Why? What's the difference? The difference is very simple. The difference is his mental attitude. Oh, by the way, you do know that when he says in verse 8, "Depart from me, you workers of iniquity," that message went out to all the opponents of Israel, and they got on their horses and ran like mad. Did they go tripping off? No, I take it he is mentally dismissing the enemy and showing strength. So that in the third or sixth chapter, you've got the presence of enemies, and that would lead us to several things. It doesn't make any difference how many enemies we've got. That's no issue. It doesn't make any difference how much opposition we've got. That's not the issue. The issue is we may fall apart or we may stand depending on what? Mental attitude. And what's the mental attitude of Psalm 3? It's a mental attitude that's full of who God is. Verse 3, "O Lord, you're a shield." He's thinking on his vertical relationship. Oh, we might put this down also. David is falling apart. Mental attitude difference is Psalm 3. He's walking in obedience. Psalm 6, he's walking in disobedience. In Psalm 3, he is rejecting doctrine. He's rejecting doctrine. In Psalm 3, he is embracing it. The Lord's a shield. The Lord's my glory. The Lord's a lifter of my head. He's just taking the attributes of God off one after another. And that's where his mental attitude is. And this is, again, a tremendously important lesson. Whether or not we stand or fall is all upstairs. Whether or not we relate properly in obedience to God, if we relate in obedience to God, you can say 10,000 of you, it doesn't make any difference. We don't even care. We can lay down and sleep. And if we are, as David is, ticking off the attributes of God, thinking of His character, he stands. And in Psalm 6, falls. So a tremendous difference between the two. In that, in Psalm 3, you have a very positive attitude toward the Lord. So that coming down to 6, to wind it up, what do you think about verse 8? Do you think the enemy all departed and saluted and said, "Yes, sir," when he said, "Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity"? Verse 10, "Let all my enemies be ashamed and sore vexed. Let them return and be ashamed suddenly." Now, this could have certainly referred to a military victory that God was going to give David, but the enemy was still there. They didn't depart forever. He had to face them the next day and the next day. And I take it that in verse 8, mentally with the right relationship to God, we can dismiss enemies. So that David can say, "Enemies, so what? My vertical relationship is established." And notice that is basically David saying to the enemies, "You can't bother me anymore. I win." And notice the basis of that action is stated three times in verses 8 and 9. What's the basis of the action? Everything's right vertically. The Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. Vertical relationship is all set up. The Lord has heard my supplication. The Lord receives my prayer, which is an axiom. Not so much the Lord will receive, but it's an axiom. The Lord receives my prayer. And therefore, because the vertical relationship is correct, he can mentally dismiss all of his enemies, and David finds himself back together again because that vertical relationship is reestablished. All right, we'll pick up next week with another psalm, and it will probably be in the same category of Psalm, perhaps 32 or 38, where David again is under pressure and how he goes through that crazy thing that we all go through, would rather have to be beaten than to face reality. Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful for David's honesty, that he opened up just exactly what he felt, what he thought, and what he was. And may we learn the tremendous strength that is in mental attitude, that if we have a vertical relationship with you, that we may say we're not afraid of 10,000. On the other hand, when that vertical relationship falters and we discipline, and even as David did, go to the edge of the grave, that we can't really handle anything, even the smallest details of life, and therefore may recognize the tremendous importance of our attitude that is fixed on obedience and the attitude that is fixed in the truths of thy word, in Christ's name.